right, all right. Hello, golf friends. It's another episode of Swing Thoughts. Over there is Coach Tim. And, of course, I'm golf spiritual leader, Humble Howard. You know that. I don't know. I'm at some point, I won't even have to say that. It'll just be known. welcome to it. Look at you. I haven't seen you in, a few hours. That's right. Tim and I are a bit giddy this morning because we've just come fresh off a 27-hole two-man senior event. And foreshadowing. Yeah, Team Swing Thoughts prevailed. Just, we won't get to it right away, but it's it was our first time in a few attempts. How are you this morning? You feel good?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. A little tired. Kind of hippie pain today, you know, old guy spending too much time in a car, in a cart, you know, that's just the reality of the world now.
Yeah, man, that is for sure.
I asked you for an Advil.
Oh, that's right.
We had an Advil midway through.
That's right. Tim asked for a mid-round Advil. And what's weird about that, now that you mention it, is that not only did I have one, I had one out, like in my pocket.
Because it was ready to go.
It was ready to go, but just in case I needed a second one. As always, this program is baked fresh and brought to you with the loving help of our fine sponsors. For instance, these fine people.
Most game improvement irons are built to promote a miss to the right for right-handed golfers and a miss to the left for left-handed golfers. We believe that when you swing an iron, the only place your ball should go is right where you're aiming. That's why the new QI irons from TaylorMade are designed for straight distance. Schedule your fitting at TaylorMadeGolf.ca and see what it feels like to consistently hit your irons far and straight with the all-new QI irons from TaylorMade. We'll give it to you straight.
I have not hit the irons, full disclosure, but I did see, you know, a lot of people are playing that QI 10. I'll tell you, the QI 10 driver, three wood, fairway woods. I didn't ask you this yesterday from TaylorMade, of course. That seven wood that you have, is that QI 10 as well?
It is, yes. And I smoked that thing. And that was my second shot of the day yesterday. Pow. What was that shot? To about, what, 15 feet?
Listen, dude, I lost track. Well, there's two things that went on, because we played 27 holes, which is 6.5 hours.
Yeah.
Yesterday, if the drinking game had been nice shot, Tim, or Tim saying 100%, you would have been hammered. Hammered, my friends, because I must have said nice shot, Tim, great shot, Tim. It got a bit tedious. But I tell you,
could have said shoddy. Could have said shoddy.
Wait. Oh, we're getting to that, Tim. Don't. It's right here. Don't you worry, my friend. We're going to get to nice shoddy. So TaylorMade Golf, big supporter of ours, and always appreciate the fact that we're associated with them. And who? And by the way, Tim and I both wore Oscar Bravo yesterday. But like the veterans we are, Tim sent me a note. Here's the shirt I'm wearing, because here's the thing. Tim and GSL, we don't play that game. We don't play the same game like some of those geezers yesterday. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. We don't want to be like the Home Depot team, you know. Resplendent in orange, the same orange. Yeah, I know, but we look glorious in our different polos. And even I had two different fellows comment. They're listeners of our fine program.
Oh, yeah?
And they said, yeah, these nice shirts. Indeed, they are. Made of fine Italian fabric. They got amazing plackets and little details that make these things just glorious shirts that you know that no one in your clubhouse will ever see it, because they only make 100 each year of each polo that they make. So, if you're intrigued, check out whoisoscarbravo.com.
And I'm going to tell the untucked shirt story quickly in a second. But first, I also want to mention our friends in Mexico who are putting together these fine trips. It's unbelievable. Go to secretlinks.golf and find out how you can spend. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you showed up with the audacity. I mean, you're such a maverick. You're just out there on the edge.
Let me finish the secret links here just quickly.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so if you're looking to book a trip, I'm sorry. I just want to get this out. If you're looking to book a trip on the Mayan Riviera, it's not just golf, but it really is an adventure unlike any other golf trip. So check it out yourself, secretlinks.golf. Yes. So we've talked
I'm sorry to jump in there, but it's just, I just want to so get to it because it's just this act of rebelliousness.
So the shirts are made in such a way that you can wear them untucked because of the way they're fit. I mean, they unlike a lot of polos, which, you know, are made so that you have to sort of tuck them. Two things at play. One, yes, it's the etiquette, and we'll get to that in a second. But the way the Oscar Bravo shirts are made is they sort of sit just over your belt line. So they kind of look neat.
Yeah.
And a couple of times, this is, by the way, not the first time this has happened. And it's more about a sort of a what do they call that? A social experiment. Because I've come to my golf course on several occasions with that shirt untucked.
Oh, my God.
I know. Really? And the stir it causes.
Yes.
Now, a lot of the young dudes, I played golf at Greystone a week or so ago with one of my best buddies and his son and his son's friend, and nobody had their shirt tucked in.
The temerity, audacity.
And, you know, by the way, I'm not making an argument that golf doesn't sort of require a certain look. You can't wear cutoff shorts or a muscle shirt. I get all that. But
yeah.
So I decided that, you know, because you were wearing your polo, we weren't wearing the same ones, and I was wearing mine, I would wear mine in a different style, and I had it untucked. And the stir it caused yesterday at this event.
Oh, yes, exactly. There's a hullabaloo.
Oh, there was. And because everybody who saw me went, what, are you not going to tuck your shirt in? I'm like, get over it. And then finally, you and I were on the putting green a few minutes before the round started, and our friend Bondi,
yeah, the sheriff,
comes up to me. He goes, you're not going to tuck your shirt, because he's a guy from my course. I'm going to tuck your shirt in. I go, no, I wasn't going to. He goes, well, why don't you just drive in the fescue? why don't you just drive in the tees? All rules are. It's like it was so much chaos in his mind.
Exactly. I know. It's just like the slippery slope to nihilism. You know, panic in the streets.
Why don't you just smoke in church? Anyway, I against my better judgment, I did tuck my shirt in just to get him off my back. Anyway, that was just a small.
Yeah, but what a sport that we spent 5 minutes talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Tucking your shirt in. My goodness, talk about a game that has baggage.
Well, yeah, and you know, listen, your father, my father, I wouldn't have gone to the golf course, you know, not that long ago, and I would have never even thought about it. I would have, because you always do. But the fashion has changed. A lot of the style has changed. The length of shorts have changed. You know, you and I and our ilk all still wear sort of shorts that come down around your knees or just above them. But I was at a tournament the other day and saw some younger dudes, and they're wearing shorter shorts. Not quite the kind of shorts we wore to gym in the 70s, but close.
Yeah, not like that Will Ferrell basketball movie. No,
but I'll tell you what, closer to that than what we're wearing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've noticed that too. My son Sean, he's 28, and he's got the shorter shorts, and I think they're just trying to show off their highly developed quads.
Well, you have to have quads to wear them, and from the look of most of us yesterday, yeah, quads are in the rearview mirror. Anyway, we're going to talk about a couple things. I want to get to the tournament, yesterday's tournament, but I also want to let everyone know that Coach Tim. In his capacity as award-winning Hall of Fame writer, because he was inducted into the Ontario Golf Hall of Fame last fall. I was happy to be at that soiree. They had some great snacks.
And event's good when they comment on the snacks.
Oh, there were some good snacks at that thing. That was a real event, like with shrimp and stuff.
Yeah, shrimp on the it was shrimp that you had to chip off the block of ice it was sitting on.
Yeah, it was nice though. So Tim writes for a variety of things, and one of the things he writes for is called the linknews.ca, which is a Club Link magazine. And it's sort of full circle because how we met was you were assigned to write an article about me. I think it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, when you, I did a piece on you working with Sean Casey and the improvements that you had made. You dropped your index by 2 points from, a season. And that's a lot when you're already, you know, a low single digits. So, yeah, that was how we met. And then next thing you know, we're doing a podcast. And next thing you know, it's 9 years later.
That's right. I just wanted to let everyone know, you can get it. Will it be, first of all, if you follow me on Twitter at humhow, it's there. I've linked it there. Is it linked anywhere on your stuff, or should I just let everyone know it's at thelinknews.ca?
I put it on Facebook as well, on our page and my page.
Well, that's grand. It's very, very, appreciated. I've had a bunch of my friends. I'll just give you the title, then I'll explain what my friends have said. It says, the title is Humble Howard, Golf Spiritual Leader and the Relentless Pursuit of Perfection. And a bunch of people I sent it to who know me thought it was very, very good. Some people don't know me as well. Their reaction was, oh, now I get it. Now I get why you're the way you are. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Anyway,
it was a fun story to write. I mean, I talked to 5 different people, all of who've had the privilege of playing golf with you, and I said in my Facebook post, "Gee, you do a podcast with someone for 9 years. You think you know them pretty well? Well, I learned some cool stuff there, and so that's the fun thing to do. But that's part of what." The interesting thing about being a writer and writing those types of pieces is you get perspective from other people. And people like our friend Charles Fitzsimmons, Grant McDougall, another FOS.
Ken your Osborne. Brother David. Yeah, my brother David. Ken Osborne. Ken.
Yeah.
Well, somebody I do appreciate
else.
It.
Oh, and Freddie. And
Freddie from the Humble and Fred Show.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do appreciate it. And I think it's, if you're curious, it's, you know, it's hard to, I mean, I don't want to use the flatter. It was very flattering in a way, but it was also, I think, like you know, you talked to some people, not everyone had great things to say about me. Well, I shouldn't say that. Everyone had something to say about me, and not all of it was, you know, there's some negative parts of me. We all know that.
Well, you're human.
And this is my brother. My brother. Here's what he said. He said, Howard is low on agreeableness. He won't do things to make other people happy. He says what he means. I think he has a big heart. That's hard for non-show business people to understand. And this is a guy who loves me.
But, you know, but obviously he's saying that, in essence, he's saying, you're an authentic person. And I think what he means by the comment about non-show business people wouldn't get it is that when people listen to, you know, it's a big kind of fancy word with baggage, but celebrity, you know, someone who's a public person. So you develop your career largely as a morning drive person.
Yeah.
And what people affiliate with that is someone who can be kind of caustic and, you know, they have a sharp sense of humor. You know, they see things and make fun of them. I wouldn't say that that's what you and Freddie did at all. But when people, when they sort of come up against what you might call a big personality, someone who's willing to put it out there, you know, they might, they don't, it's hard for them to understand because they'll project all over them.
Absolutely.
That's what they'll do. Yeah.
The way I've put it before is everyone likes when they see a character in a movie or a TV show, but maybe not so much at their dinner party. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, here's a guy with a big personality. Who invited him? Anyway, it's at thelinknews.ca. You can find it on Twitter. If you follow us on Facebook, it's there. And, you know, a lot of it is and a lot of it is, you know, we've talked about in the program how 7 or 8, even 8 or 9 years ago, you know, there was lots of moments of golf hell, as you put it. And there are less and less of those moments. I'll give you a great example. And this is going to lead into our tournament yesterday. I played a tournament Monday, huge tournament, big invitational, one of the biggest of the year. I had okay results, but very, very tough day. I'm with a bunch of the people we saw yesterday. I'm on this circuit of people. Some of the people we saw at our tournament yesterday, this is the third time this week I've been at a tournament with them. Tuesday, I had a Ryder Cup event. Wednesday, I had a qualifier for the Ontario Senior Am. And yesterday, I had a tournament with Tim. Now, not all of those results were what I wanted. You know, I had a nice finish on Monday. Tuesday, we won our match. Great. Wednesday, I go to qualify for the Senior Am, which is probably the biggest tournament I play in the year, because if you play well on that, you get into the Canadian Seniors, which is at the golf course we played yesterday. So none of that happened. I didn't qualify, missed it by a bunch. And I wrote this down. The difference between me now and even 3 or 4 years ago is that drive to go to the tournament to play with Tim would have been a very different drive. I would have been pissed off and sullen and confused and all this other stuff. But as I wrote this down, I said, yeah, I was disappointed that I didn't qualify, but I wasn't devastated. You know, it's a drag because it does. Now, I'm not going to get into those tournaments, but, you know, I've played in those tournaments and I had a great time with my buddy Tim. And I, after the round on Wednesday where I didn't qualify, the two guys I played with did. And the last couple of holes, you know, I was trying to be encouraging to them because I wanted them, you know, like hanging, like not without saying, hey, you guys are going to qualify. But I was like really encouraging to them. Good swing here now, that kind of shit. And then we're having lunch after. They both said, man, that was really, really appreciated that. And I was like, oh, it's my pleasure, you know, because that's, you know, I've learned to show up that way. And then, of course, we played yesterday and we had a nice result. The point I'm trying to make is I now know that on any given day, all golf scores are possible. It just depends on, you know, how you feel that day, you know. And you just mentioned your hips are sore this morning. You know, like I had a different swing on Thursday with you than I did the day before, and how I hit it Monday was different. You know what I mean? So those are the things that I've learned in the time we've been together that, you know, have made me feel better about the results that I get in any given golf day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We said it a number of times on this particular program, but your self-esteem isn't in the balance of every golf shot you hit. And that's the mistake a lot of people make, is that they affiliate their ability to play with their scores. And if we do that, that's just too much, I think, of an emotional roller coaster to ride. And it's like, oh, okay, well, that happened, because that's just golf. It's so cyclical. You know, how does a golf professional you watch on Friday shoot a 63, next day they're 74? What happens? It's golf. You know, it's just the way this game goes. And the more I can just stand up to a ball and say, now this, I'm working on this, believe me. If I can stand up to a ball and go, like, you know, I can accept wherever this goes, then I'm going to have a better time, and I get my chance to play better, actually.
Well, and that doesn't mean that, you know, in any given moment, you know, there was a, and I'm only pointing this out because we're talking about you for a second here, which is any given moment you might pull hook a shot off the tee, which you did.
Yes.
And be like, oh, Tim, or, you know, like, you're like, ah, fuck. Well, by the way, just to put a pin in this for a second, I just want everyone who listens to this show to know that golf course Tim says fuck a whole lot more than podcast Tim. Oh, he does now once in a while. But 6.5 hours of golf course Tim is a different experience, just so you all know. Anyway, so back to, you know, you miss hit a shot. Well, yeah, of course, you know, we even talked about this yesterday on the course. Like, I really work hard and have worked hard. You saw it yesterday, to be completely indifferent.
Yep.
As best I can to any bad shot I hit or perceived less than what you wanted shot, including my last full swing of the day. I topped a 3-wood about 130 yards and just found it hilarious.
Yeah, we all had a good time. And then, of course, Derek topped his.
Oh, fuck Derek.
Perfect.
Yeah, it was awesome. And this guy we played with, Derek, hit every 100, from 106 to 112 yards all day long. He hit it to like 3 feet. But back to you for a second and your reaction. You're going to be like, oh, dang, or whatever. You don't like the fact that you just pull hooked it into the trees. But that doesn't mean it defines you for the rest of the day, the round, whatever it is. And I think that's, for me as a listener to this show, it's one of the biggest takeaways is how you react to any given thing in the game really defines your experience with it. And it took me a long time to learn that.
Yeah, no, I go with that completely. I concur, which is a word that was said a few times yesterday.
Yeah, along with along with good shoddy. Yeah, we were playing with a guy named Marty Quince, who's a really good player, Marty. And I've been at tournaments with him for 20 years, and yesterday was the first time we got paired together. He and I were talking about it. And he's a good player, and his buddy Derek was very good. But the first two or three holes, you know, you're just kind of feeling things out and hitting some shots, and Tim hit a couple nice shots. I hit a good shot. And Marty, I think one of Marty's first really good shots, Tim says, good shoddy. And you know, I found that not only adorable, but I'm like, okay, I can't leave that alone. I said to him,
totally.
I said, what did you just say?
Yeah.
and I don't even know if the guys heard it, but he and I, Tim and I, started laughing like kids. To the point where we had to explain to the other guys, we didn't want to be rude. We had to say, hey, this is what we're laughing at. But I said to Tim, I said, well, listen, I want you to know for the rest of this day, I will never stop saying good shoddy. Although I did. But man, it made me fucking laugh when you said it. Good shoddy. I'm like, what are you even saying?
Yeah, I know. Once I got to the green, I figured it out. His name is Marty. So it was like, good shot, Marty, came off at good shoddy. It's, you know, and that's actually called a spoonerism. When you mix, it's like when you go to say coin toss, you say toin toss.
Right.
The best one ever I heard was from my mother. She said Scottish and Irish people. She goes, yeah, Skyrich and Notch.
Well, it was just part of a great day. And so it's a 2-person event. And I wish I had the names in front of me because, as I said, I played 4 days in a row, 4 tournaments in a row, 4 different golf courses, 4 different places in Ontario. But it's a bunch of the same people. You know, the guy that was sitting next to you at our dinner last night, this is the 3rd dinner he and I have had this week. So some of the names at this course, you know, are some of the biggest guys in Ontario. Dave Bunker, Joe Miz, Doug Brophy, lots of good players. And, you know, I have no expectations about us, you and I, other than I knew we were going to have fun. It's kind of our annual outing, you and I.
Yep.
And it's a great day. 3 different formats. One is alternate shot. The other is better ball. They have 3 nines there. It's also the home, by the way, this golf course, as I mentioned. It's where the Canadian Senior Amateur is going to be in September. And even though I didn't qualify for the Ontario Am, I was told yesterday they're going to have a Monday qualifier.
Yeah.
And I might go up there and, you know, give it a shot. Why not? So it's better ball, alternate shot, and a scramble. And, you know, you and I played really well in the alternate shot. I thought we were 1 over. We were 3 over. And the scramble, we were 1 under. And in the better ball, playing our own balls, we were even par. So, you know, we came in and we thought we did pretty well. And I had no sense of where that was. They had a big scoreboard there. And once we got food, I said, okay, Timmy, I got to go. I had a longer drive home. And I went to say goodbye and thank you to everybody. And they said, oh, wait a second. you've got a prize. I'm like, what? Why don't you pick it up from here, Tim? Were you there when they announced us?
Yes, I took the envelope. Yeah, I took the envelope. I was surprised. I thought that actually we played pretty well considering the day, the way they set that course up. They had us at the tips.
Yeah.
You know, we were on the back end of those tees and had some very, very interesting pin placements. But, yeah, we were second in flight three. So
they flight by, for everyone, it's all no handicaps. They flight us by age group. And our age group must have been 60 plus or 62 plus. But we were only one shot out of winning that.
Wow.
That title.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Cool. It was just nice to get, you know, some merch. Went down and I got Sandy a nice polo top, and it was fun to do.
What did you buy yourself? You bought yourself some nice shorts.
I did. Yeah, I bought some shorts because Sandy said you need to. I tried finding other stuff for her, but it just wasn't working for her. So she said, "You need some shorts, so buy some shorts." So there we go.
Well, yeah, I was thrilled for us. I sent you a note, and so we each got some prize money, and it was a great day. And I think this is our third attempt, and I think the first time that we... Well, and I even said this to you on the golf course, you know, a couple hours in, you kind of know how, you know, it's easy to see how we're playing. And in other years, we've had high scores. Like, we've had some alternate shot doubles, and, you know, you just kind of know you're out here for fun. But yesterday, we kept our bad scores to bogeys, and an alternate shot is easy to do. I was just thinking about that one place you put me. That was just so impossible. It was the kind of thing where, and we had a rule, no, you're not supposed to say sorry, even though I broke it a few times. I put you in some spots too. But that one long, like we were playing some par threes. That we had, just so you know, for seniors, we had a couple of 195-yard par threes. And
absolutely.
Like, it wasn't, they were not fucking around there yesterday. I think then they wanted to show off the golf course because a lot of those guys, not me, will be playing, are already in the Canadian Senior Am. I'm with this one long par three. Tim had the tee on the alternate shot and short-sighted me, but I was short-sighted on the side of a hill. And I just said to Tim, if we get this on the green, it's a win, which, you know, I thought I was happy to do. But that, I would say my point is we didn't have any really high numbers. We only had bogeys and birdies and pars. And so somewhere during the day, I went, hey, you know, I even said to you, this is by far the best we've ever played together in this thing. And
it was fun. Absolutely was. That Saugeen Golf Club, if I lived up near there, I'd be a member in a heartbeat.
Yeah, it's really good.
Oh, the greens are, it's a really nice, nice golf course. And the fact I got 27 holes, it's great. But, you know, it really actually, you know, there's a bit of complaining, I think, going on in our group about how they had us from the back tees. But I really respected that course. My goodness. Really good course. It'll be very good for the Canadian seniors.
I want to just mention this particular thing very quickly as a segue to Pinehurst. Because most of us day-to-day golfers, pay-to-play golfers, even if we play at nicer courses, you know, you were at Blue Springs, I've been at Glen Cairn, and, you know, we don't experience, and even yesterday, like I played, like I said, I played four different events this week on four different golf courses, different speed, green speeds, different styles. And on Monday, I played this thing. It's called the National Invite. It's a golf course I used to be a member at, and it is by far the hardest golf course I've ever played. Mm-hmm. But Monday is their big sort of amateur tournament. They have two rounds for the amateurs, you know, younger guys, and they have one round for the seniors. There's about, I want to say, 36 seniors that get in. And I'm going to name a couple of names. Dave Bunker, who is one of the best senior amateurs in North America. He's ranked in the world. He's played in the Canadian seniors a million times. He's won the Ontario Amateur. He's played in the U.S. Senior Am. And on Monday at the National, he shot 87. I've never played greens. I mean, I've played there for years, but it's been a while. My point about the green speeds and Pinehurst is Oh, another name, Ashley Chinner, played on the Canadian Tour, played on the PGA Tour, has played in two Canadian Opens as a professional. Years ago, he got his amateur status back. Now he's old like us. He was third, shot 80.
Wow.
Of the 36 players that teed it up that day, more guys shot in the 90s than they did in the 70s. And wow. the guys that shot in the 90s included a former Canadian amateur champion. I know this because he played with me. The trick in this tournament is you want to finish in the top 15 because they automatically get invited back. I tied for 13th.
Nice.
Shot 89. And by the way, I made 9 pars that day. So on the other 9 holes, because it's a par 71, I was 18 over par. And people asked me, how could you do that? I said, well, I was in the middle of the fairway. I hit it over the green, and it's really hard up and because of a lot of slope, hard to get up and down. So I did my third shot onto the green. It would be 30 feet from the flag, and I would 3-putt that for double. Why did I 3-putt it? Because they had the greens in the morning stimping at 12.7. By the afternoon when we played it, it dried out and it was windy. So now it's running in the 13s. And the reason I mentioned the speed is, and my point about most of us never get a chance to experience that, because that's about the speed those greens were running at Pinehurst. And when you're on those green speeds, when you're not used to them, like I'm not used to them, and the speeds of the greens yesterday, they were fine. Yeah. Probably running like, just to give you some perspective, those greens, they had them going pretty good, but they were probably running around 10.2, 0.3. By the time you're over 13, the ball just keeps running out. So that's why a guy like Dave Bunker could shoot 87. Because you can't stop making, you just 3-putt all the holes. So,
yeah.
And now the segue is, there were several 4, 5, and 6 footers that I had that were a little bit downhill that hit part of the hole. And then I now had a 4-footer or 5-footer coming back up the hill. Like it's, as I said to one of the guys in my group who also shot 89, who's a really good player, I said, well, good news is, after this, the rest of the week's going to seem pretty easy on the greens. And it did.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell me, because we were texting back and forth, you and I, during Rory and the final 9 holes, or I was texting with somebody, but you texted me after. I'll tell people what you said. But what were your thoughts watching that last 9 holes and the carnage that took place?
Well, like a lot of people, I was rooting for Rory. I mean, I don't know. He's so authentic. I just, you know, he's the most popular player in the world. You know, he's a good player. Just seems like a good person. And, you know, the whole story, hasn't won a major in 10 years. So it all seemed to be adding up. You know, he's, you know, for once he's making putts in a major. You know, he's knocking them in from, you know, 20 feet or so. Whereas it apparently, I remember when he 2-putted to death in the Open Championship, it's like he's just not releasing the putt or something, but he had it going and it all looked really good. And yeah, Bryson had it going. And I, you know, there's times I was kind of getting a little kind of, okay, let Bryson be. Maybe seems to be a better guy now. I don't know. Something I wasn't getting the normal sort of wattage of anti Bryson stuff going. It was kind of like, okay, he's having some fun. Maybe he's hamming up for the cameras. But anyways, I thought it was all moving along. And then when Rory, I mean, Bryson, I think, was the first to miss a short putt. And then when Rory missed that one on 16, it was, well, it happens. You don't make them all.
Well, let me just jump in there. Like, I'm with you. Like, I was not the biggest DeChambeau fan. And yeah, we're all starting to warm up to him and whatever. But I was, like you, thinking, well, this could be the end of that 10-year drought. And wouldn't that be great? Because what he's gone through and how people love a redemption story. And then he took a 2-shot lead. You're right. He made some putts of significance. And I will say this about really, really fast greens. When you, they're obviously, those guys are much more used to it than I am. But when you have a 12-foot putt on greens that are rolling 13, it's like you're hitting a 3-foot putt. And what and greens like Pinehurst or the National, if you keep it on line, it's going in the hole. Excuse me. It has a tendency to hold its line. So he started to make those putts. And when he got 2 up after whatever it was, I thought, well, you know, here we go. And then he misses that putt at 16.
Yeah, and I thought, well, okay, still there. And but, you know, I thought, anyways, we'll get into the Monday morning quarterback stuff later. But I'll just say that, you know, in 18, chips it up. I went, okay, that's certainly in the make zone for a professional guy with his pedigree. And when he missed, I was just kind of like apoplectic. But what made me really like angry, I started to hear the USA chants.
Oh, I know.
And I was like, fuck you.
Fuck you, USA.
Whoa now. But you know, full marks to Bryson. I mean, tough, you know, from that, you know, he had the root interfering with his driver swing and the branches, he hits into the bunker. That was an all-world bunker shot. I mean, you've heard announcers say over and over again, the long bunker shot's the hardest shot on golf.
Yeah, 50 yards. That's crazy.
He puts it to, what, 4 feet or something like that, and he makes that putt. So full marks to Bryson, but I was angry. I was like out the door in 45 seconds, walking the dog, and I couldn't let it go. I was like angry.
Let me read your text to me. This is literally Sunday at 6:46 p.m. Jeez, ouch, ouch, ouch. And I just wrote back, yeah, sad to see. Very sad. I am having trouble letting it go. Then you went out for a walk, I guess, and then you came back a little while later, and you said, I said to Sandy, why do I take for Rory losing the U.S. Open personally? She said, take it up with your coach, Howard. Thursday will be fun. That's what you said about our thing. Here's what I would tell you. The first putt was unforgivable. The putt on 16, and I say that he has made 496 out of 496 putts under 3 feet this season. So that putt in that situation, that's the one that's unforgivable. The putt on 18, I wanted to talk about the green speeds, because that 4-ish foot putt had break in it. He hit a good putt. Excuse me. He hit a good putt, but he didn't hit it. You have to hit it an amazing putt to sink that. That wasn't his fault. Although, what I found with him the last three or four holes is once he took the lead, he started to hang on a little tight. He pulled his drive on 15. He pulled his he pulled his drive on 16. Bunker on 17 was a pull, and the tee shot on 18. This is the best driver on planet Earth. He could have hit 3-wood wedge, and that would have been fine.
Exactly. Same as on 16 was the reachable par 4.
Yes.
What was he doing with driver? Even I knew. I went, he's going to hit it over the green. And, of course, he did. And, you know, so I don't know. Was there too much of a penalty for being short or something?
I don't know. But, and whatever that iron he hit, I guess it was the par 3. No, there was the approach shot where he hit it over the green. He had too much club or whatever it was. He got a little bit unlucky. And I just want to pop in and say about that, Bryson DeChambeau hit 5 fairways on Sunday. He could have shot a million from where he was, including 18. And I'm, you know, I had a little back and forth with some of the live idiots, but I just said, you know, listen, give him full marks. But there's no doubt about it. He had a bit of good fortune.
Yes.
For where he ended up. Because a wire bush or whatever they were calling it, here or there, could have destroyed his round, including 18. Here's another little fun fact about that shot he hit on 18. Because, you know, I'm a nerd. He had a 1.7% chance of hitting it inside of 4 feet. And if you don't believe that stat, here's another fun one for you. Of all the guys that week in 4 rounds of golf, the best players on the earth who hit it in that bunker, do you know what their average proximity was to the hole? 35 feet.
Average. 35 feet.
DeChambeau said, he said, and I know that Johnson Wagner thing was very cute. He said himself, four or five times out of 100 I'm going to hit it that close. So when Rory was in the scoring area, looking up when he had his hat sort of pushed up, kind of leaning on a table, looking at the monitor, he knows all that. He thinks there's still a chance, given that shot, that I've got a, I'm going to a playoff.
Yeah, exactly.
And when Bryson hit that shot to 4 feet, that, on top of missing those putts, that probably was the final, like, stamp of, well, you've blown another one. And I just felt, I felt terrible.
Yeah, me, like I said, I did too. But I'm walking my dog, and I'm going like, how come I can't let go of this? It's like, and I talked with our buddy Kent yesterday, Kent Osborne. We're going like, yeah, maybe just quit now. Like just done with golf. Let's move on to something else. How do we overcome this? And I didn't even sleep well that night. I kept waking up and thinking about it, and I just felt bad. But you know, and I did some journaling the next day, and you know, I've had some things, other things. I remember Johan Stenerud, place kicker for the Kansas City Chiefs, missing a chip shot of about 38-yard field goal, and they lose to the fucking Oakland Raiders.
Easy now.
I was so angry. And then 1970, I think it's Game 7, Habs, Blackhawks. I think it's Yvonne Cornway steps over the fucking center line. Let's go, a slap shot goes over Tony Esposito's shoulder. Again, like, and so my beloved Blackhawks lose. And I was super angry and like, what's going on here? These things, you get so wrapped up in them.
Yeah.
That I think, indeed, I do take them personally. It's kind of a weird thing.
Well, that's what's great about sport, though.
I think I need some help.
You do. I know what I hear is you need some. See, what I love about that is, if that's the level of anxiety for you, that's amazing. Because I've got my own personal demons that keep me up at night. But what I was going to say is, that's what's great about sport, is that we get invested and we, you know. Like, I have a very good friend, one of my best friends, Dan Duran, doesn't watch any sports, hockey, football, baseball, golf, you know, and you know, when the dude, the Buffalo Bills dude missed, you know, wide right for them.
Scott Norwood,
like, you know, we live and die by those moments because it gives somehow what it says about the human condition, but... You know, I wasn't as devastated that I couldn't sleep. I've got my own things, as I say, keep me up at night. But I did say to a few people, maybe you, my brothers and I were texting, I said, I don't think you'll ever win another one. Now, I hope I'm wrong. But at that moment, I just went, well, 35-year-old guy, golf doesn't owe you shit. You know, just because you'd like to win doesn't mean you're going to. You know, there's a school of thought that, yeah, he'll come back and, you know, win the Open Championship. Wouldn't that be great? But there comes a time. Arnold Palmer, one of the greatest golfers and one of the greatest personalities in the game, was 34 when he won his last major. There's all kinds of golf superstars that never won a major after a certain point in their lives. When Nicklaus won... At Augusta in 1986, he was 46 years old. It was considered lunacy that he would ever have a chance to win at that age. Now, of course,
absolutely,
Mickelson won at 50 something, and you know, life, times have changed. 40-year-olds are not the same as they used to be. But I have a feeling it will be very tough to come back from that one.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just hoping, as the Pollyanna-ish optimist I try to be, that this is a what do they call it? An AFGO, another fucking growth opportunity.
By the way, if you're keeping track, Tim has said fuck a million times on this show. I love it. But if you golf with Tim, prepare. Don't go with your priest. Don't take your priest in that foursome. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
I just gotta think that he could just turn that ship around and like, because that is some major league pain, and that's how we grow.
Yeah, but don't get me wrong. I want that. I want it. I want him to win because that means
the good guy wins.
But it ain't the movies.
Yeah.
And that was my reaction. I thought, well, that's going to be a tough one.
Just before we let this go, what was your reaction to the USA chants? That really bugged me. I can't stand it.
No, I'm the same. I just the whole jingoistic hoo-ha down there makes me puke. Having said that, though, and you know, the way that things have now progressed with LIV and the PIF fund and the PGA Tour, the fact that Bryson DeChambeau is not on the U.S. Olympic team is crazy. And even though I still don't think LIV qualifies for ranking points, in the current configuration of the official world golf ranking rules and regulations, they got to change them. They just do. There's too many good players over there that are being left out of these events, and it's hurting the USA because their team includes Wyndham Clark, who hasn't made a cut in weeks. So I think their team is Xander Schauffele, Wyndham Clark, Scotty, and I can't remember the fourth, but it should be Bryson DeChambeau. And if this were a Ryder Cup year and he hadn't had enough points, whatever, it would be ridiculous. So we're at a place now where that guy might be responsible for also bringing more, what is that, congruity to the whole thing. I mean, let's be serious. He is so impressive. And whatever shtick he's got going now, I've watched his YouTube stuff. It's pretty good. Like, he's engaging. He's figured. Somebody tapped him on the shoulder a couple years ago and went, hey, buddy, let me show you a different way. Because his content online is absolutely bang on. And I watched some stuff last night. He has figured out that's where the younger people really are. Because they're not on. You and I are the guys watching the PGA Tour.
Yeah, yeah.
So well, I think he's figured it out. Good for him, you know?
Yeah, and there was parts of me that I was just catching myself, my own. I really just think it's projection all the way about how you're supposed to operate and be a professional. And, like, he's playing it up to the cameras with eye rolls and stuff like that. And I went, you know what? This is actually good for the game. This is really good. You know, he's engaging young people. They're having fun. They relate to him. You know, an old fart like me, no, I don't relate to Bryson. Okay, fine. But young people do. And so all it brings energy to golf and people enjoying it. It's fantastic.
You know, I'll wrap this up very quickly. I had a conversation with my youngest who does a lot of online content creation. And we were talking about it. And I said, you know, I now am at the point where I don't really get everything I see all the time. And sometimes I have to ask her or my other daughter. And she said, well, you know, give yourself credit. You're still, you know, a little bit more with it than I said. Yeah, than most guys my age because of what I do for a living. But there's lots of times I'll see something she posts and I'm like, I'll text her and go, can you give me the context for that?
Yeah.
And that's what it is with Bryson. You know, your son's kids my daughter's age. They know their bullshit detector is way different than ours for absolutely online content. And I can see the engagement he gets. Like I said, I've watched some of his stuff before. I watched some of it last night, just happened to be scrolling around on YouTube. And he's figured it out. And I give him full credit for that because you're right. At one point, he was a douchebag. But hey, we all are at, you know, some points. For instance, I was playing with a guy once who said, nice shotty. So we can all be douchey, but he figured out a way to get out of that. And he makes I will say this now. He makes the tournaments we get to see him in more entertaining.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, he's contending Masters at the PGA. And then this is like, that's great stuff. It really is.
Yeah. And let's not take away from the fact that he hits it ridiculous lengths.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fascinating. I don't know. I keep thinking what's going to happen with this ball roll back, but that's for another show. We're working on some guests coming up. We talked about it yesterday. We're going to get some of our friends back on soon. But we appreciate you guys, our friends, listening to us. Tim O'Connor at O'ConnorGolf.ca. Read his latest Substack, as I do, and his article on Golf Spiritual Leader. Thank you to SecretLinks.golf, WhoIsOscarBravo.com, and our very, very good friends at TaylorMade Golf. My friend, I want to tell you sincerely, I had such a great time hanging out with you yesterday. It was
ditto, man. We had so much fun. I feel so lucky that that I got you as a friend and as a golf buddy. We have a great time. It really is good.
Yeah, we had the kind of laughs yesterday, honestly, more on many, many occasions where you and I were yucking it up in the cart that we had to actually say to the guys, this is what we're laughing at. It's not about you.
Because yeah, or like the little, like, it's kind of like, it's those things where you kind of have to turn your back
on
people because you got like the little giggles going and they're hitting.
Oh, it was hilarious. Anyway, we had a great time, and we always appreciate your feedback. You can get a hold of us on our Facebook page, and we will see everybody next week. Way on down south. Way on down south. London town.